Vaikuvai itamang gurur, mandala paniya daya, mera sangvaji chedha soje chonamar, chakyo padu dhane shivsuj, dhage chukye jibya sonam, dhola pishya sanje dhupar, chyo sangvaji chedha soje chonamar, chakyo padu dhane shivsuj, dhage chukyo jibya sonam, dhola pishya sanje dhupar, chyo sangvaji chedha soje chonamar, chakyo padu dhane shivsuj, dhage chukyo jibya sonam, dhola pishya sanje dhupar, chyo. Majo nang kita tanya bi sanji tanya di tuan tu, tu jalan nama apa yang dapat juga sanji di kumpul rumah di kena di tumbler syago, di tumbler syawi ceto, nabi cuy rumah di sini nabi korang macam cuy di sini, saya sini bi kau nasi sembra kau.
Let us cultivate the altruistic motivation, seeking complete enlightenment. For the sake of liberating infinite kind mother sentient beings, and with that kind of altruistic motivation, we call bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching. As you have, witnessed this very moment, before giving spiritual teaching, a lama or teacher would take time to explain the importance of cultivating altruistic motivation or bodhicitta motivation, and also guide us to cultivate that kind of motivation within our own mind.
Tati, kuno kaya dani, lama lama yung wen jambo maris. Lama to lama niya kuno di ako siyog kuras. Lama yung wen kuno di ako siyog kuras.
When I explain the need to cultivate the altruistic motivation, of course, I mean both teacher and students need to do that. And as I often remind you, that as I speak to you, I include myself, if you will, in the audience, as much as I'm telling you the need to cultivate altruistic motivation, that I also need to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
A great Indian realized scholar, Acharya Vasubandhu, in his Treasury of Knowledge, or Abhidhamma Kosh, states very clearly, and Geshe-la quoted the stanza from his memory, which basically states that one, in this case the one refers to teacher or guru, makes a gift of dharma, because the teaching is also a form of generosity, because this is the gift of spiritual discourses teacher is giving us, he or she should do so without deluded motivation, or the motivation should not be contaminated by negative afflictive emotions. So basically what we are talking about here is that when a teacher gives spiritual teaching, his or her motivation should not be I should say, contaminated or diluted by any of the eight worldly concerns, you know. And so that also tells us the importance of, you know, motivation, cultivating proper motivation, you know, on the part of a spiritual teacher. Relatedly, I would also like to remind you that, you know, it's not, you know, what kind of qualifications, if you will, qualities that one should have to be a spiritual teacher or a guru, those qualifications are very clearly laid out in authentic, you know, treatises such as Lamrim. Lamrim is a Tibetan term which means the stages of the path. So there's a whole genre in Tibetan Buddhism called Lamrim, stages of the path, and in those treatises or the texts, you can find the qualifications of a spiritual guru. Just as spiritual teachers or the gurus or lamas need to cultivate proper motivation to give teachings, and the best of the best kind of motivation is what we call the altruistic motivation or bodhicitta motivation. In the same text, such as Lamrim, we also find you know, explanation with regard to how we as disciples or students need to cultivate you know, proper motivation from our side. And as it is laid out there, that as listeners to teaching, as students or disciples, we should not have some kind of ulterior motives or worldly attitudes to participate in the teaching, such as, okay, I want to learn a great deal, so then I will be expert someday, then I have a big name, and then I have a large following, and then maybe I get rich somehow, you know, so all of the above. So if we have any of those motivations, then our motivation is contaminated, it got worldly, it's not spiritual, you know, and that's not right. As I often remind all of ourselves, and especially to those who are new to this kind of spirituality or teaching, that often we should reflect on the reasons why, you know, we need a spiritual education or Dharma education, and why we need to cultivate spirituality within our mind, which is called practice. So in other words, why do we need to study and practice Dharma, spirituality? So it's very important for us to consider the purpose of doing that in our everyday life.
Yeah.
So if, you know, the reason why we participate in any spiritual teaching, now here we are talking about what we call Buddhism or Buddha Dharma, and it consists of different kinds of discourse, if you will. That's what we call sutra discourses. And then there are esoteric discourses or tantra or Vajrayana discourses. Whatever the case may be, if we participate in any of those teachings, just to get some kind of blessings, you know, because we heard so much about blessings, so I want blessings anyway. So I go to teaching to get blessings. Then I think that's really not a good enough motivation to participate in teaching.
So then, that kind of thing, because during that, rank during that, share something, maybe share that, rank then, I'm saying that, can't be changed.
So we should have, if you will, a better motivation than that, or in a deeper motivation, which is that we want to learn about spirituality or Dharma, so which means we want to go through the spiritual education, giving teaching or listening to teaching is part of that. But then again, why we are listening to teaching is so that we are able to put it into practice. Okay? So we should have that kind of a motivation, not that we want to learn, so sort of accumulate some kind of a knowledge about Dharma, you see, so that becomes more like intellectual thing, you know. Not that we want to undermine the intellectual aspect of the teaching, but if we just only learn about something and then never put it into practice, well, it doesn't seem to work in this case, because in order to get the real benefit of the teaching, we need to put it into practice. So what does, you know, practicing Dharma or cultivating Dharma mean? You know, sometimes it might sound very esoteric and high-sounding thing, and then you say, oh my gosh, now what is that? You know, what do I need to do? In a very basic sense, practice means that as we go through spiritual education, Dharma teaches us what are the things we should not do. You know, we should get rid of. In other words, the negativities that we shouldn't do. What are the negativities? And these are what we call the objects of abandonment we need to get rid of. Okay? So as we learn about those things, then we make efforts not to do negativities, but if we have done something, we try to, you know, purify ourselves of those negativities. So that is a practice. Dharma also teaches us what are the things that we should do. We call positive actions or virtuous actions. And so these are called the objects of adoption or cultivation. So what are the things we need to cultivate? So as we pursue that, that consists of practicing Dharma.
So then I saw that when I was young, my look, when you're young, you're trying to do that. Now that you're trying to do something, I got that. She go. This she was she are trying to. I think when I was young, trying to do this.
Broadly stated, we can look at Dharma, you know, from two different perspectives. You know, we think in terms of Dharma as phenomena, okay? And phenomena consists of two dimensions or two sides, if you will. There is what we call the afflicted side of phenomena, in Tibetan called Nyurmongcho, is the deluded side of the phenomena, afflicted side of the phenomena. And then there is what we call the enlightened side of the phenomena, or liberated side of the phenomena, we call it Namjangcho. So if we categorize Dharma into those two types or two dimensions, and then learn about those things, then, you know, those are the things, as we learn, we need to put into practice.
So,
So practice, in other words, in this regard, means that we as practitioners or spiritual seekers, if you will, that we try to distance ourselves from what is called afflicted side of phenomena, or maybe for simplicity's sake, let's call negative phenomena, and we try to develop affinity with enlightened side of phenomena, or the positive phenomena. From The perspective of a law of karma, so basically we are talking about two types of karma here, negative or non-virtuous karma, which are the things we should not do and get rid of, and we should cultivate or pursue or do the positive karma or the wholesome actions. So again, if you know, you wonder why you know we should care about those guidelines, karmic, if you will, that we should not do the negative karmas, but we should do the positive karmas. Why, if you ask? Well, basically, all of us are same in that we want the you know best of everything. We want happiness, we want peace, we want success, we want prosperity. So all these things we want, really, they come from what we call positive karmic actions or wholesome karmic actions. All the things we do not want, you know, misery, suffering, pain, problems, they arise from negative karmas or the unwholesome actions. So therefore, we must not do the unwholesome actions. And so when we go, little more deeply into this matter, in some sense maybe we might be considering these things, but at another level we are really not so serious about considering these matters, because if you go deep down, negative karma actions, they precipitate rebirth in a bad migrations, in the, you know, miseries like hells, hungry ghosts, where we really don't want to be, you know. And relatively speaking, the suffering there is just, you know, just immeasurable compared to whatever sufferings we have in the human world. And so those are the issues we need to really consider and, you know, think about.
So that did you just in the middle, carrying the thing?
Dharma or Buddhism in this case is very vast and profound. I mean, there are, you know, so many things to learn about and so many things to put into practice. In a sense, it's kind of a very overwhelming in some sense. But then from another point of view, what we really are basically talking about are two things which could simply put as, you know, don't hurt others or harm others, but help others. Okay? So in a very simple sense, what we're saying is, we in our everyday life, see that we do not hurt anybody, including ourselves. Okay? And in addition to that, if we could help others, okay, benefiting others, you know, being altruistic, that we should do. If we couldn't help others, at least see that we are not a troublemaker. You know, we don't cause troubles to others.
And
at a very deep level, you know, the practice that we are talking about, we need to every day, it really comes down to, working with our mind. We need to protect our mind. So what is involved in protecting our minds, what does that really mean, is, for example, that when any negative thoughts arise in our mind, Maybe there are just a harmful intention, some kind of a malicious intention that I want to say something that will hurt someone, or I'll do something physically, you know, that will, you know, harm someone. Then as those thoughts arise in our mind, we should try to work with them and try to calm down those attitudes, negative attitudes. Okay, that's how we protect our mind from those negativities within our mind. But on the other hand, if any positive, you know, attitudes or thoughts arise, such as, you know, you just feel like, okay, I really, you know, appreciate, you know, others and their kindnesses, and I want to do something for them. So if any sort of benevolent or some, you know, beneficial attitude arises in our mind, then, you know, we see that if we could really carry that out in action, you know, put it into practice.
Rimbe, ko tsusi kenduse seni jani, ata nortin rimbe, ta de, ta seni jani, te yakoji tundusi na ta takchi yakoshene, rangu semtil takchi yakoshegen, su ta shinti karadu megi shulun dogdu ta, gyu shulun dogdu ta takchi yakoshegen samni, tindi ki ta sambaji tuta no tongu yina, ane yati yakun dogdu.
I don't mean to sound that what I just explained may sound too simple and maybe easy to practice. It is not, okay? Because that involves a lot of self-examination and looking within one's own mind. And it involves a lot of investigating our state of mind. As we look at our own mind in everyday life, if we see that our mind is being influenced by or about to be influenced by any kind of negativity, okay, then we need to really act right away and try to stop that, you know, cut the link, if you will, between our mind and that negativity. So that's not an easy thing to do, okay? So if there's any kind of positive attitude comes up, which could be very rare in our case, or we need to cultivate positive attitude so that we are able to we let the positive states of minds to influence us, to guide us, so that we, you know, we benefit others. So these things really need a lot of, how should I say, thinking, contemplation, disciplining mind, training of the mind. So in that sense, not easy. It's not some one of those things, you know, it just comes up randomly, you know. That could happen, but not much to rely upon. So we really need to make efforts to look within our own mind and work with it.
Ani karseta, lotan dawa machine ben kartani machine ben shini pinjuru mo machine ki resort mo tri ki thom mayu samni samba shivin ani kyu jaya kata ni ka chimbu yoreste.
So another thing I want to really emphasize here is that we need to adopt, if you will, long-term perspective. Okay, we must not have a great expectations or hopes. You know, as you heard Geshe-la use the word, you know, results. You know, so we should not expect big outcomes, you know, from our practice as soon as we start doing some practice. You know, if we have been in practice for a while, we think, okay, now something great things should happen, you know. Or that, you know, right from the beginning, you know, we just kind of are so ambitious, you know, which seems to be nice from some other point of view, that I want that highest level result, well, which is not going to come soon anyway. And then we said, okay, this is not working it out. And so what we really need to do is we have to have patience, perseverance, you know, and determination to pursue practice, because the practice involves, you know, how should I say, in some way a gradual process. We have to go through the process and progress along the, you know, the, how should I say, the stages and the path towards our spiritual goal. So that's very important to keep in mind. Otherwise, we might be sort of a super duper in our practice for a short while, and then we break down, say, because nothing really seems to be happening that soon.
So da ani naba sanje we chue dum khe na ta sa wa ina tam bo ne konju sa na ani sham do ya ko she de khe ba she ko ju sa sham do sham do ya ko khe ba she ta sham do to la ta le ta de bo le ka na se ta le ka ni ji Lekana kani jisawin, ti ini indrebu ditun juwa yate, siapa siapa nis? that in this thought they and it's embedded in machine and
so what do I mean by going through a gradual process, you know, is that, you know, and as Buddhist practitioners, if one considers as a Buddhist practitioner, then we started from a very basic foundation level, which is going for refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, complete enlightened beings, their spiritual discourses, and this, you know, spiritual members of spiritual community. So we go for refuge in them, called the three jewels or three ratnas in Sanskrit. And then as a part of that, we also need to follow the law of karma to conduct our life, everyday life. Okay? And as I was explaining to you before, then what are the negative karmas that we should not do and what are the positive karmas that we should do? Because after all, these different types of karma produce different results. Okay? Positive karmas produce positive results that we want, and negative karmas produce, you know, unwanted results. And so therefore, we have to understand how these karmic actions, you know, bring different results.
Ani rang ngamde shule ni tin debute nagi kele mene ta dume ta me de berik tunzo jugu yares kanang do
as Geshe-la quoted the lines of Jerome Buche or Lama Tsongkhapa sitting over there in the middle so in his words that negative and positive karmas follow us you see, in this life as well as in our future lives, okay? And so we should develop conviction in the infallible working of law of karma. With that kind of a conviction, we should learn to respect the law of karma in the sense that we do not undermine even what might appear to be insignificant negative karma. We might think, okay, so what's the big deal about that? Okay, I'll do it. You know, no. When we have that deep respect, we are not going to undermine the significance of karma. And the same thing with the positive too. You know, we don't say, oh, this is just a little positive thing, so who cares about that? You know, as if I'm going to do something big one, you know, which, anyway, there's a big question mark there. We develop this conviction in the law of karma, and conduct our life accordingly, so that's very important. Because after all, in this life, we are very, very fortunate that we have, very loving and caring family members, or that we have, great friends. But after all, our relationships, however great they are, when the time comes for any of us to say goodbye, while nobody can follow us, okay, what really follows us into the next life, future life, is whatever good and bad karmas that we ourselves have accumulated. So once we have accumulated karmas, both good and bad, these karmas produce different results which we ourselves have to go through. Okay, we are not talking about, the third person. We are really talking about the first person ourselves. You know, I have accumulated good and bad karmas which will follow me into the next life, and I am the one who will experience these things. And now my families and great friends are not with me because they couldn't be. Okay? So this is what we are talking about. So in all of these things, where do I come into the picture, right? I'm the agent. See, I'm responsible for my karmic actions.
Okay.
So these few things which I have shared this morning, many of you already know these things, in which case this should serve as a reminder for you. You may not have learned anything new, but it's just, you know, you may have not thought about these issues, you know. So this is a reminder for you, but others who are new to this kind of teaching, so then you have learned something new. So anyway, my motivation is that talking about these things is to benefit both self and others.
Yes. That is that has been can come to turn.
No, okay.
Much of his.
Now we are going back to where we left off in this wonderful text called Miscellaneous Advices from Great Kadamba Geshes. And here, now Adisha tells us that if we want to really benefit sentient beings, what we also need is clairvoyances. Especially that all types of clairvoyance, but with the one to be able to read others' mind, right? If we can read somebody's mind, then we will be able to really fulfill the wishes of those other people. Okay, so in that regard, clairvoyance seems to be a very important thing to be able to truly be able to benefit others just the way they want. But without that kind of a power, clairvoyance is, it will be rather hard for us to benefit others just the way they want us to benefit them. Okay, and so in this situation, what seems to be more important for us as individuals is first we should focus on our own practice. You know, rather than rushing to benefit others, we should work on ourselves and make spiritual development within ourselves.
And then I draw you to the thing, Gichi Drama Tavan Sundo.
The first Dalai Lama, Tawa Kindundu, in his prayers to Aratara, you know, talks about how some of the things we need to be able to really work for and benefit others, and that would include makhe, means you have a great communication skills to be able to really communicate to the people, connect with people, and the words, I mean, that's, I mean, if you talk, it's called pleasant speech. What does that mean, really, pleasant speech? Being just a sweet mouth, not that much. This is really great communication skills to be able to connect with others, and also be able to read others' mind. That's where the clairvoyance comes here, you know. So if we have those things, then we will be in a much better position to benefit and benefit others.
Tingo zerta, rando dul naem rehi, jendo bagi dul jowata, jenta unuhi manke zaba sos, jendo jibis jenta tsongo hiosu.
So in his prayers, he said that, may I never work for my selfish motives, but always be dedicated to benefit other sentient beings. And to be able to do so, may I be able to have great communication skills and clairvoyances, to do that. And also another thing included is the patience, because one needs a great amount of patience to be able to work with others and benefit others.
Lama,
So if a lama is a short temper, then it's really going to be a tough time, you know, to be able to benefit others.
Like me.
Jerembuche or Manjushri Lama Tsongkhapa also states in his great exposition of the stages of path to enlightenment. That's a whole mouthful to say, but in Tibetan it's called, you know, Great Lamrim, Lamrim Shemo. So in that he really, I mean, states, as we talked about this, I think 2 weeks ago, until one subdues one's own mind first, there's no way to subdue or discipline others' mind. Okay, so that means, you know, first we need to work with our own mind. So if our own mind is very unruly, unsubdued and crazy, but then we talk about I want to, you know, subdue others' mind and discipline, that's not going to work. Well, and maybe it's very hard to find these days, you know, someone who has completely subdued his or her mind, you know. Maybe that's very hard to find, a very rare thing in this world. But having said that, you know, someone who is really honestly making efforts and to a certain extent he subdues his or her mind, and at least being very sincere in doing that, and then maybe helping others, that would be fine. So if someone has subdued his whole mind 60%, maybe that's all right. Kajal says, I only have 25% of that, so if somebody is, you know, wondering how much I have, so there is the statistics. Next, great Adisha advises us that whatever amount of wealth or resources that we have accumulated in this life, there will be a day for sure that we cannot take any of them with us and we have to leave. So therefore, we should not accumulate negativities or negative karma for the sake of wealth. Okay. So, I mean, as we really, I mean, pay attention to this, even the wording says that it is for sure that one day we have to leave things behind. Okay, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you don't have to doubt or suspect about that. And is that really true or not? You know, I need to do research or something. No, that's true, or no, all true. And so if that is the case, if you can't take the wealth we have accumulated with great effort and hardships and all the, you know, headaches, then if we have accumulated, you know, so much negativities for that sake, then those negativities will follow us. Okay, so we better not create negativities for the sake of wealth.
So tata noriche chede dikwa masas kare jena rangle nor lonso yang ge che to ani ade luje luje mege sum majis ani nag mege yewoden majis ani yije o mege sum boten zo ta tenzu ani rangle rangle lonso ge che to tenzu ta 누가 맞았을까요?
So what does it really mean? Don't do negativities for the sake of wealth. What it really means is that we must not indulge in the three negativities of body or physical actions, and four negativities of the speech or verbal actions, and three negativities of the mind. Basically, we must not indulge in the 10 negative actions of body, speech, and mind in order to accumulate wealth.
No,
Tibetans in the sort of our regular conversations with each other, we use certain expression like, it's not worth to do this negativity for that sake. That's what we're talking about. And it's really not worth to create a lot of negativities for the sake of becoming rich. Next, great Adisha tells us that if our life is being distracted by wealth or resources, then we have made our life meaningless or life without essence. So instead, what we should do is, if we have resources or we have wealth, then we should practice generosity. We should make use of our resources to benefit others.
Generous data. Jimba tonga tala jimba seya tingi ki mingi the rani mawa ki gugu ya maras. Wala kunchula chepa kwita zi jimba rekunas. Ya kunchula chepa tang. Mangi hongla jimba sen tanga zi kajuli ya res. Lucy.
When we talk about the chinba, which in Sanskrit is called dan, or generosity or giving, it should be understood as even if we make offerings to the three jewels, that is also a form of generosity practice. Okay, generosity here does not or should not mean only to mean like, okay, if we give to the poor and needy. Now that is a generosity. But if we make offerings to, say, Buddhas or the holy beings or others, as if that is not a generosity. So generosity could go in either of those directions. There's so much information, about this particular practice, generosity, what does it really mean, how to practice it, when is a good time to, give, what kind, there's so much information on this in the Lamrim. So if you go back and read your Lamrim text, so you will refresh your mind or learn more about different forms of generosity and when to give, who to give, what to give, what not to give, and all of those things. I'll take a moment to talk a little bit about generosity. We can talk about generosity in the sense of that which is pure and that which is impure. One form is kind of a pure form of generosity, the other is the impure form. What does generosity or dan really mean in a nutshell, if you ask? What it really means is that wish to give. It's a state of mind, okay? And that means in our heart and mind, we have to let go whatever we are giving. Okay, they should not be grasping at, attached to what we are giving, So therefore, the generosity is defined in terms of a state of mind. It is the wish to give. It's letting go,
Le matona, kevin ina jimba regu yama, ta jimba, takwe jimba regu yama,
So if in our mind we really truly don't wish to give, but we give something anyway, you know, but we're still attached to it, we're just kind of, you know, holding on to it, in which case, yeah, it is a kind of a generosity, but it's what we call impure generosity. It's a contaminated form.
Yes. But if
you are motivated by, say, great love, great compassion, or Mahamaitri, Mahakaruna, or even like a pure faith or appreciation of Buddha's qualities, and out of such motivation or state of mind, if we give, you know, then that kind of giving or generosity is called pure generosity. If you know, we have accumulated or we have obtained you know, something out of what we call five wrong means of livelihood. The Tibetan term is loksonga. There are five of them, five wrong ways to get something. Yeah. So if we have something to give, but what we got is obtained through one of the five wrong means of livelihood, or two of them, whatever the case may be, but then we make that offering to Buddhas, or we maybe give that to the poor and needy, but that generosity becomes impure generosity, because the way we got the thing, there was, you know, there was a problem, issue there. So also, if we kind of by force take some what belongs to somebody else, and then we kind of try to act generous and give it to somebody else, well, that's also not the right way to practice generosity. Or if, you know, we said, okay, something belongs to others, but somehow we, you know, practice generosity with what belongs to others, but that becomes an impure generosity.
Okay.
So there are a lot of things. My point here is, like, not to, you know, that we don't have time to talk about every side of the generosity here, but there are so many things to learn about, and if I mean, we make the efforts and study those things, I think we are intelligent, you know, to learn about those things and so put those things into practice to the extent possible. You know, we need to sort of contemplate all the things we have learned, because the contemplation, it brings clarity of thoughts. It reinforces our understanding. You know, first sometimes, you know, very intelligent, we learn about so many things, but then we never, you know, contemplate those things. And after a while, as Geshe was trying to demonstrate, first seems like, you know, we have learned so much, then slowly, slowly, it just kind of started to dwindle, and then it like started to disappear and evaporate. There's nothing left now. You see, so contemplation and thinking is very important. But sometimes what we learn is only one thing, and a very limited one, but as we tackle that topic or issue, you know, from many different sides and perspectives, and we contemplate and investigate that one phenomenon, then slowly, slowly, we see so many sides of that phenomena, as Geshe was trying to demonstrate. It's like that, you know, blossoming of the flower, blooming of the flower is just now started to extend, our knowledge started to extend from that one knowledge. Of course, all the things I'm talking about here are, you know, based upon what we need to do with our spiritual knowledge and topic. I'm not talking about worldly subjects or anything like that. I think Geshe wants to answer this. Let's say we meet someone who has no interest in Dharma or has no knowledge of Dharma. So we tell that person, you know what? There is no essence in accumulating wealth. How would that person receive that information? What do you think? You say, like, you know what? It's useless, you know.
This is hilarious.
Just you're wasting your time. There's no essence to that. And so, how would that person react or even receive that information? So if you lose that, how to say, the deep spiritual sense and the context, you know, so out of context, if you make such statement somewhere, or somebody who does not have that kind of context, then it will be really hard to understand, and it makes no sense in some sense,
you see.
Great Atisha advises us that if we want to be, first I'm literally translating here and then I'll translate the commentary given on that. If we want to be beautiful in this life and also have a well-being in our next life, then we should always practice pure ethics or morality, Shila in Sanskrit. Now what does that really mean, beautiful in this life? Well, here the beauty should be understood in terms of how, you know, maybe everybody likes you. That's the sort of a, maybe you don't have the beauty skin, you know, we are not talking about beautiful skin or the tone of the skin. Sure. You're talking about how, you know, some people are there that everybody sees that person somehow likes, you know, being attracted by that person. This sense of appealing, you know. So that's kind of beauty we are talking about here, not a skin tone or anything, skin color.
No.
So if maybe perhaps the better way to render this would be, if we want others to find us attractive, attractive can be based on many other, you know, dimensions and criteria. It doesn't have to be skin color, right? And also we want to have good rebirth in the next life, then we should abide by, or we should observe pure ethics. So now what does it really mean, observe or abide by pure ethics, Shila? Again, Shila or ethics or Chultim in Tibetan is defined in terms of a state of mind. Literally translated, it is called the mind to protect. In other words, you see, it's like guarding our own mind. We don't want our mind to follow the wrong actions. You know, so it is, so again, ethics is a state of mind. And so when we talk about observing vows, right, or certain rules, if you will, what we're basically talking about is we do not transgress our vows. You know, which means we protect our mind in a way that we don't break our vows.
So that,
In Buddhism, there are many different types and levels of ethics that an individual practitioner can you know, observe. At a very basic foundation level, you know, which applies to one and all who are interested in, I think, spirituality, is what we call the ethics of abandoning 10 negative actions of body, speech, and mind. Refraining from the 10 negative actions of body, speech, and mind. Now that ethics is a very basic one which applies to, you know, all, whether we are monastics or lay people, it doesn't matter. But then, in addition to that, you know, those who have taken the monastic ordinations as monks and nuns, now they have what we call pratimoksha or pratimokkha, Pali or Sanskrit, whichever way you want to go, you know, vows to keep, which is translated as individual emancipation vows. So they have those vows to keep which lay people don't. Now, in addition to that, monks and nuns might take the bodhisattva vows, or the lay practitioners might take bodhisattva vows, then those are bodhisattva ethics. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, monks and lay practitioners might take tantric vows or Vajrayana ethics. Okay? So as you can see, there are many different levels of ethics that one could access and one could put into practice.
No.
So here the emphasis is on the purity, pure ethics. That means we really try to keep our ethics intact. So pure ethics will bring good rebirth in the next life, and also bring sort of this attractiveness to oneself in this life, that everybody who sees you somehow, how should I say, feel attracted to you. I mean, there's some sort of sense of, you know, that the positive appeal. Next, the great Adisha advises us that in this time of what are called dregs or degenerations, nigma, there is tremendous what are called sense of anger or hatred. So at this time, we should put on the armor of patience so that we don't, you know, get angry. So explanation given on this line is, in Buddhism we talk about what is known, I don't think in English it conveys that much sense, but then I don't have a better alternative at this point. It's called the nigma, the five dregs, or the five degenerations sometimes we use. So we're talking about either degenerated time, well, the degeneration works with the time, but not with some other things. That's the issue in the translation. So degenerated time, and or the dregs that related with the time, that is related with the delusions, because the delusions are on rampant, rise up, you know, at our time. And dregs related with wealth or resources, and dregs related with sentient beings, how many we have got, and the dregs related with the view, tava, the philosophical stance or the viewpoint. Okay. So these are sometimes translated as five degenerations related to time, philosophical view, or the viewpoint, I should say perspective perhaps, I shouldn't say philosophy, sentient beings, delusions, and resources, five of them. So because of this, the way it is worded in Tibetan is Dowa, means they are all like functioning like crazy. All these things are, you know, you know, big rise up. So at this time, you know, it's possible that there's so much hatred and anger, you know, and so we need to put on the armor. We need to cultivate patience.
So the human of the is that control is such a show. The one in Tazo Situ, not the need to pay to the Lenny, Zerva Gomni, Zerva Quashet Chessington, Zerva Gomta, Del Zerva Sentati, Zerva Gomgres Canon.
So in other words, that we are more sort of vulnerable to the influence of delusions. You know, it's almost like there is the anger ready to pop up. You know, there is the attachment ready to just, you know, burst. And any other forms of delusion that you just mentioned it. So this is such a time we are living through. So it's very important for us to cultivate patience. You know, to be able to deal with such delusions and to calm them down. So the metaphor that's being used here is put on the armor of patience. This is like maybe in the ancient you know, times when people go to the battles, you know, they put on the armor. So the whole purpose is so that when, you know, the enemies shoot arrow and, you know, throw the spears, you are protected, you know. So in today, maybe you're wearing the ballistic vest or the bulletproof, you know, vest. And so you don't get shot and killed. So in the same way, if we put on the armor or the vest of the patients, then others may get mad and crazy and whatever they do, or, you know, we are not going to be hurt and we are not going to be damaged. Or we ourselves might not lose temper because of this armor, you know, we put on.
Okay. So she and she saw none good. Then it's on the good. Can sound not good in. So they control that can do you want to be me on the sunny chat or yamariste.
So as Krishna is giggling over this matter, he said, you know, we need to, you know, put on this vest or the armor of patience all the time. Doesn't matter, you're at home, because we never know when the anger might pop up. Or we go to the grocery shopping, you know, we might go mad there, so we don't want that. Or somebody might get mad with us. Or we go to work, we go to school, whatever we're doing, we need to, you know, put on that armor so that we feel protected. So I think that's a good, you know, point to stop for today.
Then you know, then these any quachete need that say, Gadina Quenchogarist.
And Geshe-la says that, you know, with the ordinary armors or the protections, the protective gears that one can put on, they have weight, tremendous, some of them, okay? So uneasy to go and walk around. But this does not have any weight. It is a weight-free kind of an armor that we can put on and go to bed at night and sleep well and get up and, you know, put it on and go to work and function as we do. So this is a great kind of an armor.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, we want to have a little bit of time for question and answers. Anybody?
5 minutes.
5 minutes of question and answers. If you're sitting behind or something, just yell at me because I don't see you. Yeah? Good one. Yeah. Yeah.
I just, okay, just you said crafty motion about for months and now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think no, the Vinaya is the sort of the what should the source for the Pratimoksha vow. Vinaya is where we talk about all kinds of ethics. You know, Pratimoksha is that particular name for the monastic vows.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
When the Lord Atisha teach to the Tibetan, he said that the best meditation is mind without claim, because of the English word I don't know exactly what he meant by saying a mind without claim. Can you ask Geshe-la to highlight it a little bit for us?
What is it? Mind without claim?
Yes.
Oh, without pretension. Oh, yes, without pretension. Okay, that's what you mean. Right.
In some words, in some books, it said claim.
Oh, I see. All right. 等到点滴, 조직송진하려야, 쌤유주매부채선송샤스러워기라. 쌤교주매부도유주매부송샤스러워. 디통다로부터가시오는가지, 인진하러잠잠콘주주당기세지고다다링매매로게.
유주매시택택.
유주매부.
유주매시택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택택
I think last time when we dealt with that, first maybe I should just say that the Tibetan terms, yokyu, that has, you know, two syllables, and those are two different things, and I think Shilo will explain it. But if you take it together, there's a sense of like, you know, the deception. So we should not have a deceptive mind, meaning like, you know, we want to cheat and deceive others, okay? So one's mind should be without or free of deception. You did it, Chikson. An example of a deceptive mind that is given, kind of a, in some sense a classic one, which is in the Vasubandhu's Treasure of Knowledge. It is said that once, you know, Brahma was asked a question about Dharma, but the Brahma's response was, "I'm Brahma and Brahma is great." Okay, that's all he said. So now that is an issue where he did not answer the question. Instead of saying, "I don't know answer to your question," but he just simply said, you know, "I'm Brahma and Brahma is great." So there was some kind of a deception involved in the answer. So that's what we call yuju in Tibetan. So like in our like interactions with other people, if others ask us questions, you know, in our, the other side of that is honesty, right? If we have an honest answer, we say, okay, this is what it is. But if we don't have the answer, just don't confuse people or, you know, so kind of go round about it. We can just simply honestly, you know, "I'm sorry, I don't have answer for what you're, you know, asking me." So this deceptiveness or the deception is, you know, the other side of the honesty, which contradicts honesty. If we are being honest, we are not deceiving others. But if deceiving others, we are not being honest. We are dishonest.
In that way.
Any other questions? Yeah.
In talking about karma, the causes and effects of karma, is there a mathematical equation for karma? One that's very complicated and we don't understand as unenlightened beings, but...
What do you mean by mathematical equations?
Well, when I think of karma, if you're patient and kind, and then in your next birth, there's an equal sign, these things will happen. So that sounds like math to me. So I was just wondering.
Yeah.
I don't know. So Kishila was, I told him in a sort of a mathematical stuff, and he said, yeah, he thinks there is, it's like, you know, how we talk about, if we practice generosity,
that equals to, you know, obtaining resources. That means you will be rich or have resources. And if you practice patience, that translates into, this is where the problem have the beauty or the attractiveness. And if we don't lie, then that translates or equal to people's trust in you. If we protect somebody's life, that equals to prolonging your own lifespan, you know. But then if you put that in the, you know, sort of a, in a broader perspective, let's say in this life, you know, one has a tendency to lie a lot, you know, so people start to lose trust. But in next life, for whatever other reasons, one is telling the truth all the time, now still people don't trust you. Because that's that implication from this kind of lying in this lifetime. So then one is kind of baffled. Why are people not, you know, now trusting me, I'm telling the truth all the time, but that's that, you know, sort of implication.
The mathematics is here. Mathematics is here, your boss. You know, karma results the legal.
So Keshava thinks that, you know, in the mathematical calculation, sometimes we could make errors, you know, so that's why we have called error variance, you know, somewhere, you know. So there's the plus 3, minus 3, whatever the equation, we have to do that. But in some sense, karma is very strict and definite. You know, if you do this particular thing, it will definitely bring that, you know, provided that it's not, how to say, counteracted by some other agents, you know, it's a very definite. And the law of karma never goes error, you know, they make mistakes.
It's a condition. The laying of a sunny, the any late by Zayak, Goya put the Gubin, so called Namithi Munyaji Chagaris.
You know, some of the exceptional cases is like, you know, if we do a bad karma, because the bad karma produces bad result, that's a definite thing. I mean, there is no error variance of any kind. It just is for sure. But the only exception is, so before that karma produces its bad result, if we can intercept it or intervene it with some practice and antidotes, then this karma gets purified and then you don't have the result. Okay. You know, that's an exceptional case.
Very good.
So very good questions, and we'll stop there today. And I have some requests to make here. We have been requested to say prayers for 4 people, 2 passed away, and they are Mary Grigorik, passed away at 74, Dick Wright passed away at 92, and we have 2 people who are ill, means not feeling well, Van Carlson and I think Pete Miller. So, we request for prayers from everyone. Let us dedicate a collective marriage for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other holy beings, wherever they are in any part of the universe, live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May this and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. In short, we dedicate our positive energy for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of two types of mental obscuration: obscuration to personal nirvana and obscuration to omniscient state, and may we all reach complete enlightened state quickly.
Amen.